Thanks for listening to On Security, conversations and tips from the world's leading security experts across network, system, and software security topics. For more information, visit informit.com/podcast and subscribe today.
Hi, my name is Ben Roski. I'm the author of Computer Security, 20 Things Every Employee Should Know. If you want to buy that book, go to my website, rothke.com, R-O-T-H-K-E.com. But today, we're here to speak about another interesting book. I've got Greg Conti with me. He's the author of an upcoming book called Googling Security, How Much Does Google Know About You? This is coming out in October from Addison Wesley, and a fascinating title. Google is the dominant player in the search space. So, Greg, thanks for joining in today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Start out, who you are, how you get into this space, and, let's start at a high level. What's the issue? And is this Big Brother? How you get into it, and how much should we be concerned?
I'm a assistant professor of computer science at West Point, which is the United States Military Academy. And I've been
doing... Was I supposed to salute you?
No. Actually, that brings up a good point. I'm speaking here as a free citizen and not as a representative of the government.
Okay.
So I teach computer science there, and I've been working security in governments and in academia for at least probably the last 15 years or so. And as far as the idea of Googling security, the key idea is that when you think about the web, it's been around, since the early 90s, but it really started kicking in the mid-90s, and search was a driving factor. I started thinking about the information that we provide to online companies. So it's not just search. It's basically any online company we deal with, you give some sort of information to them. And if you take any snapshot of that, it seems that, or in any instance of that, it seems like, it's not very important. I've just searched, on some location that I'm planning on visiting, or I just sent a bouquet of flowers to someone for their birthday or whatever. But then I started thinking about all of that information we provide across, a decade or more of using the web, and then all across the millions of people actually using the web, and it adds up to quite a great deal. And you start thinking about, well, where is that information going? Is it being retained? Is it being thrown away? Who has access to it? And that's kind of the core idea of the book, studying those problems.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the question is, there's movies like Enemy of the State, who's overreact to some things the NSA can do. And clearly the NSA has some awesome tools that, we don't know about. From a Google perspective, how deep can a person go, and how valuable should we see the information, we as individuals and both as, corporate entities and educational institutions and, governments, how valuable is that to someone who wants to spend the time Googling it for it?
Well, it's the main idea is that it's actually tremendously valuable, and that people, piece by piece, any individual piece might not seem important, but the sum of all those pieces is actually quite important, particularly over time, and particularly across, if you imagine all the employees of a moderate-sized company, what they're using the web for. And, for example, if they're using an online mapping service, they may have travel plans. So they'll immediately hop out to the site, get a directions from the airport to their hotel, from their hotel to where their business meetings are being held. And that's all coming from, say, their corporate IP address space. So it can be tracked back to the company. So, and I guess at the other end of this is that there's really, over time, you've seen moderate-sized companies buying up smaller players, and then the large companies buying up the moderate-sized players. So really, you've got a couple of giants out there that have wide ranges of products and services. So they get not just search queries, but they get mapping, and they run free email, and they provide free hosted storage for people's documents and online calendaring. And you put that all together, it's almost a complete picture, depending on how much people employ those services. And they're free. And when they're free, usually free equals you're providing some sort of information that can make them, the business model behind free online services is usually advertising. So it's in the company's best interest to retain that information as much as possible and mine it so they can provide better and more effective advertising. So they have the incentive to collect, retain, and data mine the information.
I mean, on that note, you know, the Google Mail service, Gmail, for example, is free. And if I, you know, send someone an email about, poor gas mileage on an SUV, on the side I see all these ads for SUV dealerships. So using that as an example, if someone is concerned about security, you know, should they be using an application like Gmail? Is Google, you know, searching your mail not just for, you know, what you're buying, what you're searching for, but say, what religious institution you affiliate with and, you know, those type of lifestyle issues?
So, well, in the book, I drew a line. I talked about capabilities because as my background's in security, and I think it's useful to look at what companies like Google have the capability to do because we really don't know what they are doing. But we do. I think we can get a good feel for what they have the capability to do. With email, you consider the millions of Gmail accounts out there, and many of my friends and family have those accounts. So, and even if I'm emailing someone who doesn't, I think sooner or later, many emails eventually touch Gmail in some way. I mean, it's a major swath of the email that are out there on the web. Sooner or later, will touch Gmail either directly or as a forward. And then we know that because of the advertising, it's clearly in the user agreement of Gmail that they can process the emails to look at. Basically do data mining on the emails to provide relevant advertisements to, quote, improve your user experience. And that tells you that, the online companies, Google included, have the ability to process the email, find out information without requiring a human to actually read it. They can have machines churn away and find a great deal of insight.
That's a Gmail, and clearly when you're using a free mail service, when you click on the EULA, that's what you're agreeing to. But what about someone just basic, surfing the internet? There is a perception that the net is the bastion of anonymity. The protocols themselves are meant to have at least before IP version 6, zero authentication. Zero security. So from a practical perspective, how anonymous is it? And if you look at, what happened this week with someone hacking Sarah Palin's Yahoo account, the FBI is on the case, and they think even though the person may have tried to do it anonymously, they're getting close. So in the big picture, how anonymous really is the net, when you're surfing, when you're using it, when you're sending an email, et cetera?
Well, I've looked at it mainly from the perspective of using web-based tools, and in that case, I don't think there's this facade of anonymity that many people believe is there, but in reality, it's not very anonymous. I think at the core of it, each computer on the internet has an IP address, and that IP address is assigned by an ISP for a home user or a company purchases an IP address block. So the IP can be immediately tracked back to either the ISP of the user or the company that owns it. And oftentimes there's a second layer required that local organization, either the ISP or the company, will then allocate that IP to an individual. And so it can be tracked back to an individual computer. And many times IPs themselves don't change very very rapidly. So my IP address on my home computer doesn't change. My IP address on my work computer doesn't change all that frequently. So when I'm out there on the web, every time I touch an online company, my IP address is in there. In many cases, I'd argue that almost the entire web is browsing community accepts cookies on their browsers. So the cookie then provides a unique identifier. So you've got the IP address providing a unique identifier, relatively unique. You have a cookie providing a unique identifier. But more importantly, many of the tools out there require registered user accounts. So to get the better quality service, you have to have a user ID and password. And that, again, that uniquely identifies you. Particularly the larger companies have entire, sooner or later with a large online company, say Google, you're going to want to register with them to get access to the better tools. And that provides another identifier. Your browser passes important information that can be used to identify you, as does your computer, although a little more weakly. But I think the most important thing is the information that we provide itself. So after you've, even just search queries alone, if you take IP addresses out of the picture, if you just take what people type into the search box, many times they type in their name, they type in important information, their location, and there's a business there are businesses out there that do profiling to try and find out what type of person is this, what's their demographic, where do they live, and it's just a small step that I believe it's entirely possible to uniquely fingerprint people just on the information they provide. So I think the long answer to a short question is that we're not very anonymous at all. And that's just dealing with like the companies, individual companies, or a company that offers many services. But it gets worse in that you would think that as you hop from one website to the next, you're transitioning, you're breaking up your footprint on the web. But that really isn't the case, because when you think of any website that embeds certain information, like if there's a YouTube video in there, it's usually pulled directly from YouTube. So if you visit that site, you've left a track on YouTube itself, allowing for cookie interactions and IP addresses and the like to be analyzed. You think Google Analytics, extremely popular service. So if you go from one website to the next, and both employ Google Analytics, you're informing Google Analytics that you've been to both sites. And as an example in the book, I visited MSNBC, and you'd think, well, I'm visiting MSNBC, and I would just pull information from that one server. But in reality, I pulled down over a dozen different servers were contacted just by a single visit to the homepage of MSNBC. And a lot of the companies were doing just that. They're companies designed to track people as they surf the web. And then different websites buy in either because they get a free tool like Google Analytics, or they're large enough that they feel it's important to pay to have this service so they can better track, have better access to information on their users. So either in the single case of a lone online company, to the larger case of a company like Google that offers a whole suite of services that bring people in, clearly they can aggregate information across all those services. And then the ability to track people as they surf from many, hundreds of thousands of websites. I saw one statistic, 800,000 websites were in one collection, that they can track people from website to website. So So I think anonymity is just a facade right now. People think it's the case, but it truly isn't.
You mentioned analytics. A friend of mine is a search consultant. He's got a website, shimonsandler.com, and he has a lot of clients that are interested in using analytics and trying to get hits from Google. And one thing Shimon has told me is that very, very, very few of his clients really have are pushing security. Their goal is to get when someone does a search on whatever it is you're searching on, you know, to be those, you know, first two, three, four, five results. And, you know, security is not their main concern. And for a lot of organizations, they're just providing Google with so much. So with that, like, how do organizations start really thinking about closing the door and getting some control on that information, as opposed to shipping everything to Google, as if it were?
Well, I think there is movement on the general problem right now. The buzzword these days is DLP, data loss prevention, and the idea is that the companies can monitor their network traffic to see what documents are going out the door, or social security numbers being passed on the network and the like. I think with the book, though, we're kind of looking at the next generation of data of DLP. We're talking harder. I mean, it's easy to write a signature for, if a number appears in this format, it's probably a phone number, and if it appears in this format, it's probably a social security number. And maybe in the medical community, there's certain well-defined problems. So I think that's a start. And I believe, though, that user awareness is an important aspect, too, to consider what's going out the door through these innocent-appearing services, even as simple as a search. Another important part of that is the idea of encryption. There's kind of a tension there in that encryption, on one hand, helps provide protection of documents, particularly on the network. So if there's encryption from one computer across the internet to another computer, it's hard for an eavesdropper then to look inside and see what's going on. Sometimes that can make it difficult for the company unless they've got the right man-in-the-middle infrastructure in place. But it often forgets that you have to consider the trust of the company at the other end. And, you know, it's oftentimes companies will have business partners and they have certain written agreements in place. But I think they need to think very carefully about online companies as well, that there are actually a lot of information going there. So I'd like to see the DLP community take a hard look at the idea of Googling security.
It's funny, though, we've had PGP it's been available for, 15 years now, but the numbers, of people using email encryption, even at the personal level, at the corporate level, is still, let's be generous and say, 2%. So there's still, a huge amount of data out there. And, we've had, PGP's been around for 87, whatever, 92. So it's stable. It's in version 10 at this point. People aren't using it. So Google and Microsoft, more new features in their latest browsers, have a lot of facilities around anonymous browsing. So the capabilities are there, but A, are people going to use it? Are they going to configure it right? And even after all is done, is that going to help a whole lot?
Very good questions. I think part of it, like you mentioned, is will they use it? Well, is it usable? From my experience, and I've done some work in usable security, it has to be as easy as possible. If it requires someone to have a PhD from MIT in electrical engineering to use, probably people aren't going to use it. If you think of, I've been looking at countermeasures people employ on the web to block advertisements and the like. And the most successful approach is the built-in pop-up blocker that's just on by default in many, many browsers. So they don't have to do anything. It just works, and it's on by default. I think for things like encryption, it has to be built in and be incredibly easy to use. And if it's anything more, harder to use than that, then people won't employ it. And so, another facet of your question was the idea of the new browsers that are coming out that advertise at both Google's browser has an anonymity / stealth mode, and then you hear about other offerings from Microsoft and others. But that's important thing there is that's only anonymizing in the terms of not leaving footprints on the user's computer. So that's the only part that they can control. So, yeah, maybe a nickname for this, I think, is porn mode. So people can go out and surf porn and not leave footprints on their computer for their significant other to find. But that...
Significant other, you mean their boss?
Significant other or boss. Yeah, I guess it's relative. But the footprints may not be on their computer, but they certainly are on the web, at the other end, on the logs of the other companies, and a browser can't fix that.
Also, because, you know, there's a lot of Web 2.0 cloud computing. We've got this tension here. On one side, you've got disclosing so much, and to make all of this functionality work, people have to release that. Any thoughts on control around that? What entities could do
for control of their information?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a very big problem because most employees are out there trying to do the right thing. They're trying to accomplish their business goals and help their company. And there's a small percentage of people trying to do bad things, insider threat type scenarios. What companies can do, I think they have to look at their data first. This is a very data-centric problem, in that you need to identify the core business data that's most sensitive, most valuable to the company, understand where it is, where it flows. And some of the existing data loss prevention, DLP techniques, allow people to just have a monitor mode. So they can monitor certain types of data and how it's flowing, so they understand where things are going. And I'd say that's the first step. Understand the data that's most important to the business and understand how it's flowing. And from there, I think some solutions will emerge, either technical solutions or policy solutions.
Thanks for listening to On Security, conversations and tips from the world's leading security experts across network, system, and software security topics. For more information, visit informit.com/podcasts and subscribe today.